I want to begin with two gentlemen who've been very vocal and very active in this from a legal perspective. They're both attorneys, and they're representatives of a group called the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. I want to welcome Mick Harrison and David Meiswinkel. Gentlemen, I know it's an early hour. I appreciate both of you joining me on the radio.
You're welcome. Good to be here.
Now, David, let me begin with you. I know you're a retired police officer, criminal defense attorney, Army veteran. You're the president and the executive director of the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. What exactly is this group, the Lawyers Committee for a 9/11 Inquiry? What are you guys inquiring about?
Right, Frank. Well, we're a nonprofit organization, and our theme is government transparency and accountability regarding the crimes of 9/11. We have filed in the Southern District a major lawsuit right now that you don't hear about. Has to do about a grand jury petition, because we have dispositive evidence with many experts, their testimonies or their evidence, showing that there was controlled demolition, bombs and explosives in the towers. And that was what brought the World Trade Center towers down. The official story is that fires or office fires. A lot of people don't know about Building 7. That was a giant building unto itself that was not hit by an airplane that came down at free fall rate, Frank. There's only one way you can have something come down at free fall rate, and it's not by a fire. It's by explosives. So we have the proof there in the courts right now. Mick can talk about that. It's on appeal. We also done some really amazing things as far as the research and investigation regarding the anthrax attacks. If you remember, right after 9/11, a week later or so, anthrax was sent out in envelopes. In fact, Tom Brokaw got two letters. One of them had the dangerous or poisonous anthrax in, but we also had two U.S. senators that had a real fine, sophisticated anthrax. In one gram, there was a trillion spores of anthrax. Was the most sophisticated, dangerous anthrax this country has ever seen, and it was directed at Senator Leahy and Daschle, and that it really was around a time when the Patriot Bill was being discussed and trying to be pushed by Vice President Cheney. So we have done our homework. We are professionals. We have colleagues that are scientists. The evidence is in. If you go to LC4FOR911.org and look at our evidence, look at the papers, you'll see a whole different story than what's been told you.
Well, you said a mouthful there. Let me follow up with Mick on a few different aspects of what you said. First, though, if you go to your website, lcfor911.org, you see a tribute to Ed Asner, obviously a legendary actor. He's been a guest on this show before he passed away. He was great on Mary Tyler Moore and on Lou Grant, and he's great in everything. Explain to folks what Ed Asner did with respect to your movement and why you viewed him as such a good friend and a supporter.
Well, I'll start, and Dave may want to contribute. This is Mick. Ed was a member of our board of directors for several years, and he supported our efforts for what Dave has described to be our mission, transparency and accountability regarding 9/11. And he was himself convinced by the evidence that explosives were used to bring the World Trade Center towers down. And he wanted the public to learn the truth. He struggled, even though Ed, as you know, is probably one of the more articulate people out there, being a distinguished actor. He didn't really have difficulty expressing himself, but he struggled with getting folks to listen to the facts about what happened on 9/11. And it gets back to the idea you started with, Frank, on the program, that historically there's been an effort to discredit critics of the official story, no matter what their evidence and no matter who they are, and to treat them like pariahs and wild-eyed, crazy conspiracy theorists. Ed was trying to cut through that because he was convinced of what the truth was. He believed he was intelligent enough and common sense enough to know the truth when he heard it. And so he worked with us for a period of years, and he also worked with architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, a group of scientists, architects, and engineers.
They're coming up a little later this hour, by the way.
Oh, good. Oh, good. So anyway, the short version is, you know, Ed did what he could do, and we, you know, it's a great loss for us, for Ed to have passed away. We're going to miss him. And I think the world doesn't really appreciate the contribution he made to this effort.
All right. Well, I'll focus more on the engineering aspect with the with Roland Engel, the acting CEO and president of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth, in a little bit. But can you explain, David, briefly, maybe not from an engineering or an architectural point of view, but from an evidentiary point of view, what some of the evidence is? I'm not asking you to lay out the whole grand jury suit here on the radio in a few minutes, but what's some of the evidence that suggests that the towers and World Trade Center 7 came down as a result of a controlled demolition rather than as a result of the fire caused by the airplanes and the jet fuel?
Right, Frank. A good question. If you go to our exhibits, you'll see we cover that extensively. One of the first things that'll jump out at you is there's statements there from approximately 123 firemen that were in the buildings and experienced bombs and explosives. And they say that there's a total of 155 first responders, that including police officers and EMS people, that it basically makes statements to that effect, too. During that period of time, right after that, they were basically commanded by their superiors to give us statements that were taken down, and they weren't released right away. The New York Times had to sue under a Freedom of Information Act to get those statements, and we have people that have gone through them with very conservative parameters. In other words, if it wasn't really saying a bomb or explosives, they didn't count it. So that Graham McQueen is a doctor of 30 years, a university professor, and he was one of the ones that did that original study. We have reports in there of peer-reviewed reports by a distinguished scientist, Niels Heritz from Denmark, from Copenhagen, and Stephen Jones from this country, and others that have examined four separate dust samples that have confirmed that there's nanothermite in the dust. That's a high-grade military explosive. It's never been refuted. That they've seen it in their electron microscopes. There's a major report. You can see it as a first document, a first exhibit. We have a report in there, a seismic report from Columbia University, basically, where a Professor Rousseau from France, an expert, he looked at the seismic reports, and he concluded that there was explosions in the basement right before the airplanes hit and right before the buildings came down. And apparently they weren't synchronized exactly as it had been planned. There's people like Willie Rodriguez, who was a hero in the North Tower and got awards for saving hundreds of people. He was in the basement before the planes hit when explosions came off. And he has testified to that before the 9/11 Commission, but they blacked his testimony out. So that's some of the evidence there. You have firemen and policemen that experience explosive that you don't know about. You have seismic reports that indicate bombs in the building that the public doesn't know about. We have documents of the peer-reviewed articles that show nanothermite, a high-grade military explosive in the dust that people don't know about. So what we want to do is take this to a grand jury. The plaintiffs or co-plaintiffs include Bob McElvain, who lost his son in the North Tower, Jeannie Evans, who lost her brother, he's a firefighter, Diane Hetzel, who lost her husband, who was a firefighter, and Chief O'Kelly, who was a hazmat fire chief from New York City, who has permanent damage to his lungs from working on the piles. And the government so far has said they don't have standing, if you can believe that. They've lost loved ones. They have this evidence. They want to take it to a grand jury under the First Amendment. You're entitled to that. Under different federal legislations or statutes, we're entitled to that. And they will not, at least thus far, consider that evidence, which would change the whole redirection of this investigation and history, actually, Frank.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Mick Harrison and David Meiswinkel. They're both attorneys, and they're both part of a group called Lawyers, the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. If you have questions for them, we will try and get to you. You can call in at 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. We just ask that the questions be respectful and serious. We're not interested in a shouting match or jeering or anything like that. So just call in if you have a legitimate question, 800-848-9222. I want to follow up on the legal aspect of what you're saying. But Mick, let me ask you about what David referred to earlier, the anthrax attacks. I have always been very suspicious of how the government handled the investigation into these anthrax attacks and from start to finish. And I don't think we've ever really gotten the full story on these anthrax attacks and who was responsible. Do you believe that the anthrax attacks were directly connected with the September 11th attacks?
Well, we've done the short answer is yes, and I'll tell you why. Our organization has done a petition to Congress on this, very detailed. We're on the verge, probably tomorrow, of filing a new grand jury petition on the anthrax attacks, 130-some page detailed petition. The short answer is, and folks who lived through that era will remember, younger folks won't realize, the anthrax attacks came on the heels of the 9/11 attacks. Literally, they started a week after the 9/11 attacks, and they exacerbated the sense of fear in the country and were a second, probably the second, equally or maybe more important motivation to attack Iraq and get us into this, you know, ongoing war on terror. It is, you know, the horror of the 9/11 attacks plus the fear of the anthrax attacks motivated folks to support pretty much whatever the Bush administration asked for at the time in terms of the military actions, even the new Patriot Act and restricting some of our freedoms here. So the timing was suspicious. But if you look, you know, once you embrace, I didn't want to embrace it, but the evidence forced me to embrace the point that Dave is talking about, which is that explosives were used to bring down the Trade Center towers. Once you embrace that because of the evidence, then you have to ask yourself, well, do we really think the 19 hijackers, you know, somehow got those explosives into those buildings or were others involved? And then you look at the anthrax attacks, which came a week later and seemed to have the same, how shall I say, purpose, which is to motivate the American public to support the wars that came. Then you look at how the FBI mishandled the investigation. They accused several people early on and backed off because they were proven wrong. They eventually settled on Dr. Bruce Ivins, who ended up committing suicide reportedly before the FBI could, prosecute him or take him to a grand jury. And eventually it became clear that the anthrax, which was first reported to have come from Iraq or Al-Qaeda, a lot of people thought, and that's what motivated, you know, us participating in the wars. Eventually, the government had to admit, no, that anthrax came from U.S. military facilities. And that's no longer disputed. The FBI admits that now. So when you start putting the pieces together, it does look circumstantially like the two sets of attacks were connected. They were brought for the same purpose. And the high-tech military explosives that Dave is talking about that were found in the dust from the Trade Center collapse, no one's explained where that has come from yet. But we do know where the high-tech, highly sophisticated anthrax came from. It came from U.S. military facilities.
I know this is legal questions as well, but I know this is broader than the scope of what's in the grand jury suit, in that you're not claiming that one group or one individual is responsible for the attack. But I am curious if you have a theory as to who may have been responsible for planting the explosives. Do you believe, for instance, that Al-Qaeda, the group that we've been told carried out the terrorist attacks, did in fact carry out these terrorist attacks, and that the explosives were just another dimension of that? Or do you think that the planting of the explosives was done by an entity within the government?
You know, the way we handle that.
Go ahead, Dave.
The way we handle that right now is that as an organization, we haven't taken the position of who is actually the suspects. Although individually, we would have our own suspects that we would consider. But that's why we want to give the information or the evidence to the grand jury. They have the ability to subpoena people and to make deals, subpoena records, etc. We could lead them. We could assist them. We've already told them we can assist them if they want to call us. And we can provide that type of information to them. When you start accusing people publicly, that's you have to really, have your stuff together. We do have our stuff together, but not to the extent where we want to actually tell you what our organization believes, because our organization hasn't taken a position on who did it. Our organization's taken a position on the government story is wrong, that it has to be reinvestigated. And then we can actually intelligently answer that question.
Understood.
Individually, I think we all have our ideas as to who may and where you would take this investigation. If I had the power, if I was the prosecutor, I would take it maybe in a certain direction. But that's not official for our organization. And Nick, you might want to comment on that also.
Well, I agree with what you said. We think that's the job, Frank, for the grand jury, the question for the grand jury to answer. The FBI should have already answered that. They've had 20 years to answer it. And, they haven't done their job. We're now in the difficult position of trying to do the FBI's job without having their resources or their subpoena power.
We're talking with Mick Harrison and David Meiswinkle. They're with the Lawyers Committee for 9/11 Inquiry. Just help me out from a legal perspective with this grand jury that you're seeking. I've been on a grand juror in New York. I think a lot of people are familiar with the grand jury process, both federally and statewide. Usually the way it works is a prosecutor convenes a grand jury. They'll present that grand jury with evidence, and then the grand jury will choose to issue indictments, a true bill, or not to issue indictments. There's not currently a sitting grand jury that you're seeking to present evidence to, right? You're trying to get a grand jury form. Can you take us through kind of what you're trying to do from a legal perspective?
Right. Sure.
Mick, you can go first if you want to. Mick has.
I'll just give you some of the technical details on the special grand jury, and Dave can add his insights. The special grand jury is sitting. There should be a special grand jury in New York pretty much all the time. And there are two different federal grand juries. There's the standard grand jury and then the special grand jury, different statutes. The special grand jury has some additional powers, although one might argue the regular grand jury could do it. But the special grand jury, apart from doing what you described, Frank, of looking at the evidence presented by the prosecutor or maybe the evidence the grand jury decides to dig up on their own, which they have the power to do, and issuing an indictment or not, they also can issue a report, a public report, if the judge allows it to become public, on government misconduct that is discovered during the course of the grand jury investigation, even if that government misconduct doesn't rise to being a federal crime. So when we filed our petition with the U.S. attorney in New York, we relied on a federal statute which says that the U.S. attorney has a mandatory, emphasize the word mandatory, duty to report and share with the special grand jury a citizen report of a federal crime such as ours. And Dave and I actually, after we submitted the petition, we called up the U.S. attorney's office and essentially, because they'd given us a letter that said they would comply with that statute, which imposed the mandatory duty on them. And by the way, that duty is not really at issue in our litigation. The government has admitted the duty, at least in their U.S. Attorney's Manual, the federal courts have acknowledged the duty as being mandatory. So there are other issues involved in the lawsuit, but that is not one of them.
Understood.
The duty is established. So we're you know, the U.S. Attorney told us that you know, they would comply, but when we ask, had they actually given the evidence to the grand jury, they wouldn't tell us, and said that the secrecy rules prohibited them from telling us anything.
Understood. Now, I have one quick question here, and then I want to give as many listeners as possible an opportunity to ask questions as well. We've seen that of all the people that have been apprehended and in some cases even admitted their complicity in the 9/11 attacks, like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other people that are currently at Gitmo, even though that it's 20 years later, we've seen no trial, no indictment. Do you think the reason that we've seen no trial to date, part of the reason could be that certain entities may not want some evidence coming out that contradicts what would be the prosecution's claims?
Well, good question, Dave. You want to start? Go ahead.
Yeah, I'll start. I mean, the reason you wouldn't have someone testify is because you'd be concerned about what they're going to say. They might tell you the truth. All right. And the truth may burn some people. And that could be one of the reasons. You know, that's totally contrary to at least our way of life. It used to be. There was no such thing as an indefinite detention. Usually you had charges and you had a trial eventually. You had due process. So for these people, there's no due process, and yet there's no trials. So we don't know what they would say because they're not allowed to testify, at least at this point. And you raised the question, Frank. It may be the reason they may not be allowed to testify or have a trial is because their testimony might be searing or might be pointed towards certain people that have special interests and want to protect those interests.
Interesting. All right, let me get in a couple of calls here. A lot of people lining up to chat with you. Let's begin with LQ in the Bronx. LQ, what is your question for David and Mick? Matt, help me out here. Do we have LQ? Can we bring him up there? LQ, can you hear me? All right, we're going to put you back on hold. We'll try Pete on Staten Island. Pete, what's your question for David and Mick?
Hey, Frank. Here's my question. Actually, it's two questions. One, on the 28th of August, the parachute guy landed on the Statue of Liberty. I wonder if that was ever investigated, if that was to show that the sky was, you know, open for business, meaning, you know, terrorists could get into the country. And my second one is with Building 7, wasn't a lot of classified documents kept in that building? I heard things about that. I'm wondering if you could tell me about that, because 20 years I've been wondering this, my wife and I.
All right, Pete, let me give them a chance to weigh in, because I want to get to as many people as possible. Yeah. Go ahead, gentlemen.
Yeah, that was Enron building. That was a lot of Enron records were in there. That was the second biggest headquarters of the CIA in the world. So the CIA had connections there. The Secret Service had connections there. A lot of big banks were in there. So in other words, that was a facility or a building that you would think would have incredible security. And yet, if it was brought down by controlled demolition, it takes weeks, if not months, to set up the charges to bring it down in its own footprint. That came down at a free fall rate for 2.5 seconds. The whole building collapsed in less than 7 seconds. And that building was 610 feet, would have been the biggest building in 33 states, and it was 47 floors. So that was a giant building into itself, Building 7. So there's a lot of mystery about that. And, you know, that should really be opened up and investigated. It's a good question. They call that the 9/11 truth movement the smoking gun.
Interesting.
Because they can't explain the free fall. See, the jet fuel would normally burn at about maybe 1750. In order to melt steel, you need 2800 degrees. But remember, this building wasn't hit by an airplane, so there's no jet fuel. It's normal office fires on a few floors. And up to that time, a steel structured high-rise has never collapsed because of fire.
Yeah, we're going to get into this with Roland Engel from a technical perspective in about 5 minutes. Let me try and get to as many of these as possible. Gene is in Manhattan. Gene, what's your question for the gentleman?
Frank, I went up 8th Avenue on a bus with people that had been in a conference at the Trade Center and had been told to come down quietly and leave. They didn't see what I saw that I couldn't even tell them about. But how could an explosive have gone up in the basement prior to the planes going in, which I saw the aftermath because I live on Washington Street and Christopher Street? How could the explosives have happened prior to the planes going in, and yet people coming out from the towers that had been in conferences within the towers?
Well, that's a good question. There were reports, and Willie Rodriguez, one of the janitors who saved a number of people at the Trade Center during the attacks, has testified that he experienced explosions early on, just before the plane hit in the basement, but he didn't say it obstructed what you would call egress, the ability of folks to leave the building. It was in at the lower levels. So, you know, that's questions like that need to be examined by the grand jury, and all the witnesses need to be heard, the first responders who observed explosions, folks like Willie Rodriguez, but also folks like you're talking about, folks who escaped the building at certain times. All those stories need to be heard, and those pieces need to be put together.
Let me squeeze in at least one more call here. Russell is calling from White Plains. Russell, what's your question?
Well, you know, my question is, I felt there's a rational reason, there was a good intention in pre-placing explosives in all the buildings around the World Trade Center because they didn't want a domino effect, if you'll excuse the expression. But what I wanted to know, are you guys coordinating with this guy, Jerry Goldman, who represents the 9/11 families? Against the Saudi government?
We're not involved in the Saudi lawsuit. So the short answer to your question would be no. We're open to talking to the lawyers and the plaintiffs in the Saudi lawsuit. We do have some common concerns.
All right, we're going to have to end it there. But please keep us posted on this grand jury petition and where we go from here legally. And from an architectural and engineering perspective, I'm going to talk with Roland Engel about this in just a minute. Gentlemen, thank you for the time this morning.
And Frank, thanks for having us on. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And if people want to check out your website and see that nice Ed Asner tribute, and including a video that he recorded introducing your group, they can go to the website lc for 911.org. You can read the petition to present grand jury evidence or to present September 11th evidence to a federal grand jury. It's pretty interesting. It's lc for 911.org.